that's where they're going to charge. The people that are on the committee with me, we've got Michael Amo, who's in charge of the program, great care organization. If you're not a member yet, look into it. Great, great group. Kelly Young, the Associate Director of National Affairs, the New York Farm Bureau, is on the podium. She joins us also on the council. And then finally, if you go across the street to the Racing Hall of Fame, the historian there is Alan Carter. He's one of the most knowledgeable people I've ever met with on the sport of horse racing. So we're here today really just to listen, okay? We're very fortunate. We've got two people here, one from NYRA. Rodnell Lurkman is here, and he will be able to participate in the program and give some feedback. And NYRA's been nice enough to have a little treat for us when we leave the program today. So we'll see that in the back by the table. I'm going to turn it over right now to Dave Grenning. I think everybody here probably knows Dave. Dave is the columnist for the Daily Racing Forum that follows the New York tracks. He's here every day. One of the great things I think about the sport of horse racing is we've always had so many great writers. And Dave is in that tradition. He's been with the Daily Racing Forum for the last 14 years. And I heard him on one of his programs. He mentioned that Joe Hirsch was one of his mentors, and you can see why. Dave does such a great job here every day. Even if you can't come to the track, you feel like you've experienced it. Dave, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you, Pat, and thank you all for attending our New State Racing Fan Advisory Council meeting. This is about you guys, the fans, so you don't need to hear a whole lot from me. You know, we're obviously a lot of the things in racing is developing new fans and how to develop new fans and whatever the initiatives and doing that. And Rodnell Workman, who's relatively new to the game himself, was started at NYRA on May 30th, I believe, and he's the chief marketing officer. And I wanted him to talk a little bit about some of the new initiatives that have started here in Saratoga and where we take them downstate. So I'll let Rodnell talk a little bit about that.
Thank you very much, Dave. Well, first and foremost, excited to be here and meet you, the fans. And ultimately, this is what it's about. This is what we do here. And we want to put on a great product for you guys. So,
okay, sorry.
I was told that I talked too much and too loud. So, but anyway, you know, as Dave suggested, you know, I've used the last 3 months that I've been here really just to understand the sport, hear from fans like yourself, and really look at what you see. Understand what you see. How can we make this product better? How can we get you more engaged? And ultimately, how do we continue to grow this sport that we all love, that we're all fans of? So, you know, as Dave mentioned, some of the things that we've looked at, you know, we've done a lot of great things here in Saratoga, which is tremendous. And, you know, you guys see that between the premiums and the food and dining options and some of the other amenities that we do, it really is hard to kind of top that. But this year, we've been able to introduce a few new programs that we didn't have before that's relatively new for us. One of them was a racing 101 program, which ultimately the objective of the program was to really educate new fans on the sport. We all know the challenge of the sport, the strategy that's involved, handicapping, what have you. For new fans, they're not nearly as aware. They don't certainly understand how that works. We identified a program that we wanted to put together to hopefully engage with new bettors, help them understand how the handicapping process works, and what you see already to help them understand it and really get excited about the sport the way you do. So that's something that we did over 3 weekends in the backyard. Hopefully at some point you saw it. And we're definitely looking to grow that and maybe bring it downstate and hopefully bring it back next year. Another program that we did last weekend was Social Media Day, which was important for us. Social media is a great way to reach new fans, to communicate, to discuss, to share. We're all aware of Facebook, platforms like Twitter and so on. So we did a day where we really just engaged that audience, our fans that speak to us via these channels, to talk to them and really communicate our message and, quite frankly, share the beauty of Saratoga and horse racing. So that's something that's big. These are some of the programs that we're doing. And we will continue to look to grow the sport, to do new fan initiatives that you guys will get to see and ultimately hear what you're saying and understand what do you want to see that's going to make the experience better for you beyond winning the exact that's a given. But ultimately, that's what we want to do. So you're going to see a lot of that in the months and years to come, and we hope that you're excited and as excited about it as we are. So again, thank you, Pat.
Thank you, Rodnell. Now, this council here and Rodnell will probably be open to some questions. This whole thing is about you guys, about hearing from you. So what I'm going to do is I'll take this around, and you guys can ask me questions, and hopefully you get some good answers. So I'm going to just, I'll come up to you.
Thank you. My question has to do with the state government takeover of Liga Racing. Was the council consulted on this, and or did it take a position on it?
We were not consulted on the takeover by the state.
We were not consulted on the takeover by the state.
Do you have a position on it?
Do we have a position on it? Not a formal position. We have not met to discuss that. It's something that we probably will put in the report, awaiting what happens in September. That would be my take on it, if others want to speak to it.
Well, I think one of the things that, if you read the brochure, you can see the responsibilities that we were charged with. One is to complete a report to the Racing Region Board. And that's what Patrick mentioned, issues that the fans bring to us, the fact that you're raising that here now. And I guess I'd say, what is your opinion? If you tell us your opinion, we want to hear everybody's opinion so that we can weave that into our...
My opinion is that it's a complete travesty, that it's a major industry being taken over by state government. It was done by executive fiat. The governor decided to do this. He wrote the law. The legislature passed it, I believe, without debate or dissenting vote, and there's been no meaningful discussion, and it has to be the most significant thing to happen in New York racing in decades.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much.
Could I just ask that gentleman to put your concerns in writing to us, because it's thoughtful, and I want to see it in writing, please. It's hard to hear everything up here. I want to get the position in detail.
I've been writing about this, and in fact, Andy Pyre wrote about what I've been writing about this in the Washington Post. It was in yesterday's Racing Forum. So if you're interested in what I have to say, there's adequate opportunities to find it out.
Okay. Anybody else have a question that they want to ask the council?
Just to follow up what he said about emailing you, is there a deadline on our comments via email? Is there a certain deadline you want these comments by?
Is there a deadline for our comments?
Lee Park, I think if we got our comments by the end of October, we could probably put them in the report. So I would say October 31st. And that's a good point. You know, we're going to post that on the website so everyone's aware. The last day to submit comments for this year, we expect to issue reports on an annual basis. And I just want to point out, we'll certainly field any questions. We're limited given our authority to give answers. But we also want to hear feedback and input. I think we're getting some of that, but I just want to make you aware of that.
Given that this is a limited form, time-wise, would you recommend us to just email you our comments and feedback versus opening a discussion now?
I think it's helpful if we discuss some of them here. I think that gentleman outlined some of the points made in Andy Byers' article, and if people want to follow up on that in writing, I think that's very helpful, because that's a complicated and detailed issue. Anybody else have a question they want to ask?
I have a couple questions, actually. First one is it absolutely certain the governor is taking over the state, or the state is taking over NIRA? That's my first question. Is that a 100% certainty that that's going to happen? Or is he going to let NIRA run with somebody that he appoints to run? Or don't we know the answer?
Dave, we don't know the answer at all.
Do we have any kind of deadline as to when he will be making that decision?
We know from the paper, I mean, it's such a very tightly held discussion. Any of us really know specifically to make an official statement.
Okay. My other comment or question will be, you guys said you were going to be providing this information to NIRA, correct? And they will be, like, using this information to help them improve the fan experience. My main concern is quality of racing here, while still really good, has taken a lot of shots over the last couple of years. It seems like greed has overcome the desire to run quality racing here. When I started coming here as a kid, racing here was almost never as bad as it's been the last two or three years. Fields here are atrocious some of these days. You can't run 12 races if you're running junk. I mean, I don't want to see Finger Lakes horses running here. If I want to bet Finger Lakes horses, I will bet Finger Lakes. I do not want to see them here. So I don't know who to advise that to, but comments that I've sent to NIRA kind of fall on deaf ears. And while NIRA does a lot of things that right, their television production, the stakes program they put on, and they're trying to educate fans are good. But if you're going to run top quality racing here, it's got to improve, and this greed has got to just stop. I mean, it's getting to the point where I don't want to bet races anymore here. I'll go out and bet Del Mar where I can get perfect weather all the time.
Dave, we talked about that earlier. Maybe you might want to comment.
I'm going to address both of your questions, both of your points. The first is what's going to happen. You know, the governor is, I would say, sometime in the month of September, is going to make his appointments of the board. He's restructuring the board. He's going to have majority are going to be his appointments. There's going to be, I think, five left over. NIRA's going to be able to appoint five people, probably many of the current members. I would think that some of Cuomo's appointments are going to be some people that are currently on the board as well that were appointed by the governor. Is he going to sit there in the office there and write the races? No. He's going to find someone to run racing, whether he might stay with the government, he might go outside the box. I'm not sure. I don't think anybody really knows what he's thinking. But it's when people talk about a state government takeover, I don't think you're going to see some politician from Queens writing the racing condition book or doing anything like that. They're going to hire maybe new people or maybe keep some people from within and restructure. I don't think you're going to see a drastic difference in racing. Your point about the product, I hear you, I understand what you're saying. The racing form, take a seven track racing form, go through the card, go through that Del Mar card. You can't bet the weather. The weather's great, I get it, the weather's fabulous. The racing there is not even close to the racing here. And I know that there's some really cheap races here, we just run too many of them. And, you know, we run a 12 race card, there's gonna be some, what you say, junk or lesser quality races. But the 2-year-olds that are running here versus the 2-year-olds that are running there, it's not even close. And I'm not standing here as a defender of NIRA or anything else, I'm just saying, as bad as you think it's here, Del Mar was able to card a whopping 7 races tomorrow. Monmouth is running 7 races now. We could probably do with a few less races, but look, they're trying to beef up the bottom line, and when you're in their position that they're in right now, trying to maybe fight for their jobs, I almost sometimes can't blame them, even as I stand here dead on my feet. But
can you give everyone your opinion as to why they're writing 11, 12 races a day? And I'd like to hear the opinion of people on the board, why they think they're writing 11, 12 races a day.
The short answer is because they can't. They put out this condition, they put up the condition book and the extras, and the races are filling to the point where they are giving what they feel are good betting opportunities. The racing, I mean, if you're not getting 11 races with a bunch of 6-horse fields. I do think that when they decided to make the 2-year-olds, limit the 2-year-olds to 8 races or eight horses that maybe they thought they were going to lose a little bit. They did that for more of a safety situation than sort of a handle situation. So maybe they're thinking on the back end of that, that they're looking to, you know, make up, recoup some of that money by doing that. I'm just guessing. I don't have the authority on that, but. Current situation being that, but see, that I don't think that anything that they do is going to really make that big a difference. Anything they do between the last 2 or 3 weeks here is going to make that big a difference. This meet is going to be, based on numbers alone, this meet is going to be successful. Why? Because you're talking 40 days versus 39 days. That hurricane last year lost the day after the Travers, which is usually a big day. It didn't just impact the day after the Travers. You couldn't travel up and down the Thruway for 3 or 4 days afterwards. That last weekend, that last week last year was not very good, primarily because of the weather. So they're already up. They could have terrible days, the next 3 or 4 days, whatever we have left. They're going to have a good meet numbers-wise. So they've already surpassed, they're going to run the equivalent of 2 more cars than they did last year with all the extra races. So I don't know that that's going to win them any favor with the governor. I don't know how much I don't think he's paying as much attention to that as maybe they want him to. But you wanted their opinion, so let me get that.
Can I make a comment? I'm a harness racing girl. I'm not a thoroughbred racing person per se. And we run 11, 12, sometimes 13 races on the card. And the issue, I don't think, is the number of races. The issue that you guys are talking about is the quality of the horses in those races and how those races are carded. Am I right? You've got 11 great races with you. So I think what's helpful to us, we're not here for NYRA. We're here for the Racing and Wagering Board. And it's helpful to hear what you guys are frustrated with, but it's also more helpful to hear what you want to see instead or what improved your experience here. This is great feedback, but with that, if you can tell us what you'd like to see also, what's working and what's not working, that's the best feedback for us to get the Racing and Wagering Board, which by extension will be given to NYRA on the other track.
Does anyone else want to comment?
Thank you, Debbie. I'd ask you to respond to this too, and to the gentleman's question. My understanding from what I read, and I paid attention to the language, the governor said that the decision with respect to oversight would last for a 3-year period. At the end of that period, his words were, racing would go back to private control. I thought that was a very interesting word for the governor to use. Whether or not NYRA is considered private control of racing or not, I don't know. And I don't know if you would want to comment on that, because I know you paid attention to the memos and the information that's come out.
I mean, I would think that what that's going to translate to is that it's going to be a bidding process here in 3 years, and what under his control is to try and set it up to make it the most attractive bidding process. Now, does that mean we're going to bid 3 racetracks and see if we can get 3 different owners? I don't think that works. Are we even going to be talking 3 racetracks at that time? Is Aqueduct going to be a play, or is Aqueduct going to be an indoor water park, Great Wolf Lodge, Ozone Park, and then we're going to all be a Belmont Park? It's hard to know what he's looking to go forward 3 years from now, and we don't know what he's looking to do 3 days from now. But I would think that in 3 years it goes an open bidding process.
A couple of suggestions. My issue with racing at this point has been with the integrity of the game and the integrity of the past performances and issues primarily for me of late announcements with respect to equipment changes and especially new geldings, if you will. That, as far as I understand, are events that occur significantly out from publication time for past performance. And there is, for me, an unfairness when the past performances, and I've said this before, that I consider to be the equivalent of a prospectus. I'm using the past performances, whether the daily racing form or the track program, and I'm relying on the information that's there to make my wager. Lots of people are relying on that information. And when that information is changed, sometimes in time for me to make an adjustment, other times when I may not get that information or may not be able to access that information, then I may put money into the windows and I'm not getting what I thought I was getting. I have a recommended solution to that. I'll just ask the question. I don't know what penalties there are, and if they are exacted on trainers and owners, when the information that is required before a deadline for a past performance or an overnight is not there, and under what conditions or circumstances are the horses allowed to run. So that's a significant concern for me, and it's a concern that's been expressed to me by fans. The other thing that I would just make a suggestion, this is the Racing Fan Advisory Council. I don't know how anybody in this audience came to the track, but my father and my uncle took me. And racing, to me, has always been kind of a network marketing kind of experience. Someone brings you to the track. I'm not sure that there's enough incentive these days for people who are familiar with racing and love racing to bring someone to the track for an experience. So the question is, I know I'm going to have a good time. I'm going to bring someone to the track. I'm going to try and help them have a good time. But what's in it for all of us if we show up new for the first time? So I think that we need to find a way to entice we who love the game to bring those who don't know that they love the game yet to the game. I don't know where the brainstorm is going to come for that, but I think that that's an area that is important.
Yeah, let me just comment. Yeah. Of course, that's Tom Avallo from Track Facts and Capitalistic OTB, and we appreciate Tom's support and counsel. I think he gets to one of our missions on that handout that we gave you. We have to advise the Racing and Wagering Board ways to improve participation in racing attendance and involvement in racing. And I'd like to hear from you, as fans, a reaction to Tom's comment. I think that's the way I came to the track. Somebody, a relative of mine, a friend of mine, took me to the 1978 Las Vegas. And I thought they were all going to be like that when Al and our firm come running down the lane. That's how I got there. I kind of wonder, what do you think we in New York need to do? What incentives do you think we need to do to bring more people to our sport? Anybody have any ideas? What would you think? We got one here and one over there.
Before I do that, I just want to comment on one of your points, and I'll get right to you. You're right. Some of the changes of equipment that aren't announced until the day of. What happened, it's only a fairly recent phenomenon that we take entries 4-5 days out, and sometimes when those entries are made, the changes aren't made at that time, and they don't show up in the overnight, and the racing form for the Equibase basically works off the overnight. I'll give you an example, and I'm not blaming anyone, I'm just saying, Alan Jerkins won the stake the other day with the horse named Go On Bridle, I believe it was Go On Bridle, and at the time, the day of, now that was Monday, we took entries on Friday, I believe. You didn't know that he was taking blinkers off the horse until that day. The public handicappers, of which I no longer am one, but I used to, make picks in the post. I don't make daily picks, and a lot of these guys go off those, changes. Didn't know that either. I think it's incumbent on the horsemen, once the overnight comes out, they should have a certain, if it's a 4-day window, three-day window, the paper's not printed until the following day. They should have a 24-hour window. I'll make it a 24-hour window. Maybe this is something you can put in your... They should review the overnight when it comes out on Friday and get back to the racing office by Saturday and say, I meant to put... I've put blinkers off or blinkers on, or I'm running this horse on Lasix or off Lasix, or I have an aluminum pad on or off. They have 24 hours to make... Because they know what they're going to do. So they should make sure that the racing office knows what they're going to do so that they can get the information out. I think that's something that I agree with you there. And everybody, it happens a lot. But several trainers, I could go through name a bunch of trainers to get the blinkers on, blinkers off the morning of the announcements made then. And I know that a lot of handicappers want it before then. Now, I'm sorry, I'm going to go to your point.
Miles Biff. should do something more for the children, people that come.
Kids. I've been coming here since 1971, and like some kind of youth, like they have swings or something, so the parents can have something for the kids to do, or arts and crafts center, so from 5 to 11, not a babysitting, but just something for the kids to do, so when the people are drinking or whatever they're doing, they can play the horses, and kids will have something to do, so it'll offset everyone.
We had a gentleman right here and a guy in the back. Somebody else?
On that, I just mentioned my 10-year-old who likes to come, but he's very confused when he looks at the, you know, he's at the age now where he can play. And I think it would be helpful if Naira would consider maybe a program for younger children, you know, realizing they can't wager, but to make it somewhat more interesting for them at the track.
I'd like to just address a few issues. One, to remind you, it's 100 times easier to keep existing clients than to go and look for new ones. So a lot of us that are here right now are the existing clients, and I think what we have to say is very important. One of the things I've noticed relative to handicapping is it's great to have the horses come down from the stable, I guess what used to be called the detention barn. But when they hit the point where there are people, where there are handicappers, those blankets have to be coming off the horses. That is our one shot to really see what the horse physically looks like. And I can say, yes, there might be issues about the horse needing the blanket or what have you, but on an average, it's about 20% of the horses have blankets, so 80% doing okay. The second thing I'd like to say that I've noticed recently is during the works in the morning, some of the horses have the saddle cloths of the trainers covered, or they're not on, so that you don't know really who the horse is being trained by. And I find that very offensive to come out and have this secrecy going on. I don't know where it stems from, but between those two, I think it's inappropriate.
Just a comment for you and other people. You're right, and I think there's a rule that says why the saddle cloths have to be visible in the clockers. So I think if we see that, somehow you need to tell us in the race and the wagering council, if this happened, we need to hear that something, you know, because how else, if it's happening regularly, we need to know about it. Everybody needs to know about it. But just for people who don't know, the group that I'm involved with, Thoroughfan, we publish annually here in the Gulfstream and a couple of tracks, a towel guide, which goes out free to anybody. And so if you haven't got one, you know, email us and tell us in the bit you want. It's a little pocket guide that shows you over 150 towels of the trainers that you can carry with you in the morning and watch the workouts. But it's thoroughfan.com, and let us know and we'll get them to you.
I will just say one other thing for us that are existing clients. When we purchase our seats, which are season tickets and things like that, that have to go in by a deadline, I think you need to look at how those seats are assigned, because this year in particular, on Traverse Day, a lot of people were bounced. And they were season ticket holders, and these bouncings went to non-season ticket holders. I'm just sharing these things because these items, I think, really, there are a lot of us here that have issues that need to be looked at right now, and it's bad enough that we don't really know who we're really dealing with governmentally, but keeping us is the most important thing we can do.
Can I just speak to the seats? There was a great idea. You know, you walk through the seats here at Saratoga, when maybe you don't have one, you see a ton of empty seats. And Mike, I know you discussed this. We had an idea maybe these people could donate their seats back and they would be for sale for the public, and maybe that money could go to a retirement foundation for horses or something. But it somewhat addresses your point, but it's a shame that the, you know, the fan that comes here maybe for the first, second, or third time, it's very hard to get a good seat, but there are so many empty seats.
Going this for like 10 years, and I see people come up into the stand Yeah, the best thing you can do for the fans is to improve the wagering proposition. The paramutual model, Alan, you can tell us, is how old? 100 years old? We haven't improved it in 100 years. Overseas, they have fixed odds betting. They have exchange-based wagering, which is incredibly democratic. Meanwhile, we're stuck here with the takeout rate on some bets of 25%. That's the best thing you can do for the fans. You want more people involved gambling? Because that's what this is, a gambling game. That's the best way to do it. Are you going to play poker or, let's say, blackjack or craps that have a 4% takeout? Or play a game that has a 25% takeout? And David or someone else can tell me we have the lowest exact rate in the country or the second lowest rate. But just because Kentucky and California, their rates are too high, doesn't mean ours should also be too high. Why can't we have exchange-based wagering here? It's incredibly democratic. It's incredibly fast-paced and fun. It lets you have opinions for and against forces. There's nothing wrong with that. And it's had explosive growth overseas. Explosive. And New Jersey and California are going to come online within 12 months. And this is good for harness racing. This is good for horse thoroughbreds, whatever you want. But we're stuck with a model that was invented literally 100 years ago. There's a reason our handle is down 50% in real terms, inflation adjustment terms, over the last 30 years. It's because we don't offer a compelling wagering product to our fans anymore. It doesn't take a lot to see.
I make a comment there. Neither knows along with everybody else you make more money with less of takeout. You have to convince the legislators that. It's called money churning, and they know it, but they can't do anything about it. They'd love to go 18%, 19%.
I was going to say, given the takeout situation, takeout situation got us into where we are right now or where we're going to be in the next couple of weeks, I don't think you're going to see any changes in takeout. I don't disagree with you about perhaps coming up with some new wagering ideas, including exchange wagering. And I'm not so, unfortunately, this state is not proactive, it's reactive, and they'll watch and see what happens in California and New Jersey to see if that actually takes place before you see it here. We just gave to her.
Can I just make, before I go, just a comment? I know that there's been a number of people that have contacted us about different ideas. Betfair, of course, I know John Creasy had done a column on fractional wagering and sent it to us and asked to consider that. There was a group in New Jersey that proposed the odd, the field and the other. The favorite in the field bet, like you see on the roulette table, you can play one or the other. We do it for the future bets and the Derby and other events. Something that would give a broader spectrum to the game. Tell us, send us email. Anybody has any ideas, send them, because if we can put them on the report, then they'll get read.
I think betting's changed the work of the state to figure out how to make money on it.
Thank you. That's exactly what we want.
I've heard a number of people talk about how they got into this, how much they love it. I love people. I won't bore you with the race in the 1980s that got me into this. But the other thing that got me into this, the reason I own horses now, I started out as a handicapper, and I started out coming to Saratoga watching workouts from May to November. And it was the most wonderful time sitting there with my cup of coffee, and I wasn't an owner then. And I could go on the track and watch those horses and think about what the future might be. And somehow, after September 11th, the Wagering and Racing Board decided. decided that terrorists were going to come in and only owners and licensed personnel would come in the morning. And I'm just going to say, I have a house here now, I'm from Massachusetts, but this town puts up with a lot during the race meet. They put up with traffic, they put up with congestion, and so many residents I've talked to have so loved going in the morning, and so many people I know got into racing, got into ownership because of that ability to go in the morning. And no one can explain to me why terrorism or whatever it is occurs at 8 o'clock in the morning, but at 10 o'clock, if you've paid the park, you're going to that same barn area with the same ability to look around because Star Horse is on the track, and somehow now it's okay. Mm-hmm. So if you and the Wagering Racing Board, if you're not one of those many committees we form in this sport to deal with problems that end up nothing, if you could possibly get the Wagering Racing to stop enforcing this ancient regulation I'm hearing about and letting the people in Saratoga come back on the track, that would be a wonderful thing.
Yeah. When we were at Aqueduct at Gotham Day, we had a forum like this, and Charlie Hayward mentioned that they were going to put a viewing stand right over by East Avenue here on the west side of the Oklahoma train track. I don't know what happened with that. I keep looking over there to see if they built it, but we're going to mention that in the report.
I just have a quick thing. I know you talked about trying to get people to come back, come to basically be part of the, you know, to get a new influx of people. I know it was a Travers Day, but I happen to have seats in the clubhouse, I mean in the grandstand on the weekends, get moved around constantly, but that's not here nor there. My problem is they always have that NYRA rewards about buying, you know, getting a car so people will bet and everything like that. And then I go up to the grandstand and there's only four machines and one of them is not even working. You know, the slide. To me, that's people that have, you just told them to go get a card, and now they're going to say, this is ridiculous, why am I can't bet, what's the sense of doing this? And they have all the lines with all people and four machines, and one of them was down. And you can't get people to bet or, you know, get involved if they can't do that.
Thanks. That's the kind of important things we can put into the report. Do you notice that more particularly down in the grandstand and in the clubhouse? Because I have a car in the clubhouse, it doesn't seem too bad, but we should go down there actually. Look. So the machine's there, but your car doesn't work. That happens to me constantly.
Yeah. I had a problem with their car. I had to turn it up. It wasn't working. Most of the machines are cash cards. So I just need to write your voucher.
Anybody else over here? You have a comment? Over here, I'm sorry. Thank you.
I have a couple of things. Used to be, you got 1 minute to post. The final odds were fairly stable. Last couple of years, you've been getting a lot of conversions and flip-flops. I had a situation about a year ago. 1 minute to post a 3-5 shot. The horse is 3-5. The race goes off. He's the third favorite. Now, I have a suggestion. I don't know if you can do it. Since everything is based upon the tote board, exactness, trifectas, not just win bets, and the start of the picks, why not cut off win bets, 1 minute to post, and allow all the other bets to go until they release the horses? This way you would have some stability. And I don't know if you can do it, but you wouldn't have the problem with 0 minutes to post, the horses go from, say, 3-1 down to 6-5. The second one, and this one drives me nuts. At the end of the day, they play a song called New York State of Mind. Now, it's not a New York State dash of mind. It's New York dash State of Mind. It's a New York City song. Why are they playing a New York City song in Saratoga? They had a great song, which they played for decades, called Saratoga Thoroughly Thoroughbred, and it was eliminated by Kenny Nolan in the mid-1990s.
you remember Kenny Noe's 105 Harvey Pack. It's a terrific song. The only song better than that is My Old Kentucky Home. It's so far superior to Del Mar's song, where the turf meets the surface, not even funny. Get a copy of the song, listen to it. It's a terrific song that should be played instead of New York State of Mind. And the third one, Scratches at the Gate. In California, the young old divorces, and you have 2 to 3 minutes to reconfigure your bets. If you're playing a complex bet, like a super effect at Park Wheel, a late scratch destroys the bet. In New York, they go off seconds later. I wish they could use the California's plan and give you a couple more minutes. And that's all I have to say.
Thank you. Did you have Pete over here in the yellow shirt? He way over. He's had his hand on the chart.
My concern is, are we raising these two-year-olds too hard, too fast? I mean, with the first one being raised, are we going to have several horses, such as Willie Beeman, turning around twice on a four-day rest, coming back here for more money, and is that going to be a reason why we're not going to have a secretary or a seed basket or a 6, 7, 8 year old that we actually have a fan that's going to follow that horse so he doesn't have to go into early retirement because he was pushed so hard into a 2 year old?
Dave, could you help? I know you echoed a couple of times. I heard you're really beaming the 2 year, the turnaround. I needed to have you say, we couldn't hear it very clearly up here.
Well, I'm just concerned that are we pushing these two-year-olds too hard, too early? That's why we're not getting a 5 or 6 year old horse that the fans are actually getting close to and want to chase because we push these animals too hard, too early. When you have a first one, such as Willie Beeman, get on a 4 day rest twice, come on, Saratoga Pole. To go back in and jump on to $150,000 per, you know, how many horses are they going to actually do that to? And should there be a weight limit or a time limit, you can't push this, you know, 2 or 3 year old, you know, within weeks of racing again?
Okay. Yeah,
I'm going to answer that. No, there doesn't need to be a time limit. I don't. At least we have checks and balances, and in about a few days or next week, you'll have new checks and balances after this committee that's supposed to have studied the breakdowns at aqueducts, and they're going to come up with some recommendations, you know, in terms of many things. But, you know, I don't think you're going to solve the breakdown situation. Do we start up 2 years too early? Probably we do. But that's not something that the New York Racing Fan Council is going to be able to change. Running horses back on short rest. Woody Stevens won the Belmont Stakes. Al Durkin's made a Hall of Fame career doing it, and you know Rick Dutcher did it twice with this horse, and I don't think there was any problem with it. Now, do we start doing that with 2 year olds? I don't know. Do we have too many 2 year old races, too many 2 year old stakes? Do we need 3 stakes up here? Maybe not. That could be looked at. But I think there's enough of them to. I don't think that's as big an issue as some people make it out to be. But I do think with this committee's report, which was given to the governor on Tuesday, you'll see a few changes that are supposed to be designed to protect the horse, whether they're 2, 3, 4, or 5.
I think Kentucky races 2 year olds before we do. They race in March and April.
Well, Keeneland starts in April, and their first race of every meet is a 2 year old race, or at least it's in the first three.
Any other comments on improving, getting more fans to the races? Focus on that comment. Suggestions for getting Dave?
Well, I don't really have a suggestion on that right at the time. I did want to touch on something about the integrity of the game. One of the things that's really missing information-wise that's unbelievably important is trainers have to be held accountable for giving out some of the information. One of the things that they're not held accountable for currently is when horses come out with front wraps on. Front wraps are there to protect the horse's tendons and ligaments and muscles. If the horse has not been racing with those, and you don't know that, and this happened to me this meet, and he comes out in the last leg of the pit six,
and I've just bet four horses into the pick six, and three of my four come out with front wraps on, and all of them run in the tank, that's a problem. That's huge integrity. I mean, in that one instance, that cost me a lot. That doesn't make me want to come back and bet the next day. And the people that were with me that went in on that pool were novices. They were not happy with that. That integrity's got to be upheld. And it's also got to be upheld on the management level. I mean, I know Nyra's kind of taking a lot of shots on that, and I hope they're cleaning it up. But if you're going to lead the way in the industry, it's got to start from the top down. And this information has got to be gotten out to the fans at every level. Medication violations has to be gotten out to the fans. Front wraps has to be gotten out to the fans. Shoe violations. Anything has to be gotten out to the fans because the information is there. It should be getting out to us in some kind of timely fashion. If it's not, then you're basically bought a lottery ticket. I can buy a lottery ticket for cheaper with less aggravation than I can for coming here.
I think it's you sort of parallel what Tom Amello was talking about, announcing equipment and kind of ball it all together and say, that's an integrity question you're raising.
It is. And when you have those, that's part of the thing with getting new fans. I mean, if fans are hearing other people and knowledgeable fans at the track questioning the integrity of the game, I mean, I bring new fans here a lot. Some of them come back, some of them don't. But when we're talking and they hear us over talking about the integrity of the game, why are they going to come back to something that has questionable integrity? And the answer is they're not. If they can't trust what they're putting their money in, they're not going to come back.
Okay.
It's really that simple.
Dave Grammy, Brian, I just have a question. With the Twitter, let's say the things that are reported, like blinkers off, for instance, does Nyra push that out on the Twitter account?
I think they put it on their website. I don't know that they actually put it, I don't think they put it on their Twitter account. They update their website frequently. There's, you know, one of the things that I think was brought up in terms of slate scratches, not only gay scratches, but for example, there was somebody tweeted me something about the stake race today. They thought that they had heard that they didn't know that the 2B was scratched. It was actually the one that had run on turf. The 2 had never run on turf before. That was not, the 2B was not scratched at noon, but I think, and maybe not been at 12:30, but I do recall that horse being scratched later in the, you know, not that late, but like 1 o'clock-ish. And because the sound system here has not been very good at this meet, I could not hear it. But when I went to the website, it was already on the website. So for those bettors who are using either your computers or your OTB or your home, I think you need to, you know, continually update, go to their scratches, because they do a pretty good job updating that. The one thing about the front bandage is, and I hear what you're saying, but I think it puts the horseman in a bit of a precarious position from the standpoint of, in a race later in the day, the track changes. You get a little bit of moisture in the track, and they don't know, and the track turns to mud, and if a guy wants to put front bandages on his horse, I don't know that he should be precluded if he hadn't said 4 days out that he was putting front bandages on. And so it's a little bit, I think it's a different situation than a blinkers on or blinkers off thing when they've actually already experimented with that, probably training wise. Whereas with the bandages, I think it's more of a, you know, in some cases it's more of a protective thing. I understand in claiming races, it's, you know, also if a guy claims a horse first time off the claim, that guy's tendency may be to put front bandages on, whereas the guy who would claim the front, maybe not.
Dave, I just thought we'd take maybe two more questions, and if you'd be kind enough to do maybe a 5-minute wrap-up, tell us maybe your experience and what you see the coming weekend, we'd appreciate it. And by the way, we'll stay around after the program if you want to approach us individually.
Way in the back. Somebody way in the back through, Dave. Way in the back.
Hello. I'm sitting here and had very good experience in Velma.
Speak up, I can't hear you.
I've had very bad experiences in Velma, and that's why I come up here to bet. I've been coming up here for X amount of years, and I don't like traveling from Queens to here and see the first four races being two hurdle races and two maid races. What I got here is that in 36 days, you have run 144 maid races. That's approximately 5 out of every 10. It's almost 50%. It's 42, actually. And I'm disappointed with the amount of people that are here, because obviously we are better, and we have a jockeys association, we have an owners association, we have a trainers association, we have the New York Racing Association, we have the wagering association, we have this, and nobody in 30 years can get it right. If you run a casino, like you're running these tracks, you'd be fired. Simple. We're here to enjoy racing. We're not here to watch 5 days in the races and 2 hurdles. I mean, it's a fraction. Are you playing a game where you're trying to make the prices enticing to come here because of exotics and all that other stuff? I don't think that we're going to get any new players to come here. You got to pay attention to the players that are here. And our children, or whatever it is, when we bring them up here, will follow that too. You don't bring in kids to the casino. So I really don't think if you're a handicapper and want to play, you would bring your children here unless you just want to follow the council.
So you can go back.
That's the gig that you get. But anyway, here what we got is how many stables or how many horses can you accommodate at this track? We think there's 1,800. Okay. How many are in the stables at Belmont at the same time? So we have 3,500 horses. When you ship a horse from Belmont up to here, you don't have to pay for it. Is that correct? NIRAD's a true shop. So you're talking about 3,500 horses. Oh, why not? This is the biggest game the United States, and you can't even get, you're having 80,000, 87,000 purses for horses that ain't worth getting. Joe, you're giving the money away, and you still can't get people, you still can't get good horses. So I don't get it. I really don't get it. Plus, the personnel down at Belmont, which I left, I've known here since the track opened. And I've had 5 instances with the tellers trying to cheat me. And one of them called me a racist. And I got thrown out of the track. Then another instance was that my ticket that I had in my hand was not on my car, nor did it register anywhere. They had to believe that the ticket was the right one. I think that the problem is, in my situation, the problem is that I think that people that are trying to serve the public are not serving the public. They're there for their own care. Every teller, I can't say every, a lot of tellers try to cheat you. A lot of tellers don't say hello like they do up here. They don't say thank you like they do up here.
Yeah. So can we wrap it up? Because we have 2 more. We want to watch our time. People have to get out there. And I just want to make a comment before you go. Nyla was very kind to make some gifts available, the top of blankets they gave away. If anybody wants to leave, make sure you stop over by the table and pick up your gift. We do appreciate Nyla doing that.
I do enjoy the occasional.
generational bet. I have grown up in the sport. My grandfather brought me, my mom brought me, friends of ours are here tonight. When I was little, where you brought your kids was to an activity tent that focused on horse racing. You made your own silks, you dressed up like a jockey, you got on the horse simulator, and you learned about different track surfaces, and you took it in a little bit at a time. And when I was 4 years old, I drew stars on the sleeve of a set of silks, and at 24 years old, I have those silks today. So for my generation to get involved, it's a little hard if you didn't start that way. And while I completely respect handicappers and I'm all for the game and the betting aspect, I think we need to reevaluate how to bring people in for more than just that, how to bring them in for loving the animals and loving the industry. And to back up a statement that was made before, maybe that's giving Saratoga another entrance into it, bringing the people back and getting this back to a town-loved sport that's more than just downridden and trodden by tourists coming in.
Thank you.
You got one more in here?
Dave, can we take one more? And,
and
as I said, we'll stay around and take any other comments.
Let's bid.
Thank you.
Number one, when a horse gets scratched, I think we should have more detail than veterinarian scratch or steward scratch. Why was the horse scratched? You go to a harness track, they'll tell you if a horse is sick. But a horse is lame. There was a horse today that was scratched in a paddock. Why was he scratched in a paddock? Was there a paper problem? Was there a problem with the ownership paper? Did something not match up? Stuff like that. There should be a deadline, a couple of races before that race. Don't let the horse come to the paddock and then scratch it. The other thing is, this year at the Belmont and I believe the Travis also, there was special rules put in for veterinary access to horses. They had to sign in and out with a security guard just to come into the barn to look at the horse. They had to list everything they did with the horse and it was put on a website. Why is it only for those two races? Why can't that be done for every graded race? And also, why can't it be made public which vets work on which horses? Thank you. Dave, are you going to close it up?
Well, Pat, I want, first of all, on behalf of the council, thank you for coming and staying as late as you did and expressing your ideas. And you should definitely reach out to them via email so that they can put your suggestions, comments, and concerns and put it in their report and get it to, whatever this report's going to the governor's office or the state race and wager board, I'm sorry.
Dave, one thing we didn't mention because of time, but we'd love to have you do it, is one of our requirements is that we're supposed to consider, is there a way we can create an I Love New York horse racing campaign, much like they have an I Love Horse New York other things. And we haven't even started. We certainly would like input and ideas because I think we should be talking about horse racing from Buffalo to Montauk, Ogdensburg to Staten Island. Why don't we make it a sport for the state, not just at our tracks or anything. It should be a sport.
Now, I do agree with the young lady here who mentioned the comments about, these are your existing fans and these are the people you need to pay attention to as well. Obviously, it's important to bring new fans into the game, but the way the new fans are going to come into the game more so than anything else is if the existing fans bring them, and if the existing fans have a good experience here, they'll bring the new fans in for you. You won't have to have a whole big campaign to do it. It's good to promote and good to advertise, but the best advertisement are the people that are right here now who are staying here till 7:45 to bring, to listen to what you have to say, to express some of the things that they have to say. I know, most of you, you guys all love this game. You know about Belmont, you know about Aqueduct, and obviously Saratoga just kind of speaks for itself and runs for itself. And, we have 3 more days or 4 more days here, a great weekend with the Woodwork. Today's Thursday, right? So you got tomorrow, you got the Twilight Racing at 2:30 with a 9-race card. Only my 3rd 9-race card of the meet. Thank God. You got a 12-race card on Saturday with the Woodwork Forgo and some really top quality racing. And, I know that it's not all top quality here, but if you're not here Saturday is some top-notch racing. And then the 2-year-olds, Sunday with the Spinaway, Monday with the Hopeful. You get to see some future stars. But don't think that racing in New York ends on Monday. I know we have about a four-day break before we start at Belmont, but there's some really good racing at Belmont Park. And for those who haven't been to Belmont or those who want to expose your friends and family and to bring new fans at Belmont, two of the key days are September 29th with the Jockey Club Gold Cup and all the big races that lead up to the Breeders' Cup. And maybe the best day of racing in New York is the New York Showcase Day, which I believe is the 20th of October. Help me out there, Dan. 20th of October, where not only the racing is all state fair racing and all New York bred, but there's also, they have like a little flea market there and New York wines and wares to show off. So I think those are two key dates that if you want to hit Belmont Park, you should. And I think that's all I have. You guys have something to wrap it up?
Just thanks so much, Dave. Really appreciate it.